This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt with the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt has entered the building, ready to disseminate a wealth of information from the near century of he's been working in landscaping and things like that.
The near century. I really appreciate that, Kyle.
By the way, the updated weather. We are looking for 27 tonight, about 50 tomorrow. The rain still slated to come in Thursday night. And then we have the snow level beginning to drop. Saturday night drops to 700 feet going into Sunday.
Wow.
But little or no snow expected. Sunday night, it's at 1,100 feet. On Monday, it goes up to 1,800 feet. Monday night, though, back down to 800 feet. And Tuesday night into Wednesday, it is down to 600 feet. So they are saying by then for Monday, rain and snow likely. Tuesday, rain and snow likely. And the same for Wednesday as well. It just depends on what your elevation is, whether you're going to get any or not.
Well, I am.
You're already predicting that.
Well, I know. I'm be in those elevation parameters there.
Well, it's interesting because 24, 36 hours ago, forecasters were really thinking more to the north, not thinking quite this low. We were looking, at 2,000 or 3,000 feet, and it's shifted now to where there is a potential for it. We've got to do something to stop it.
Put a big dome over the county.
Oh, there we go. Let's get some people going on that. We'll get a subcommittee.
Yeah, call for bids quick. Well, this is the landscaping, nursery, plant stuff. I'm going to give you a lot of stuff to think about. And if you have any questions, you can call 673-4464, ask your question, and I'll be glad to answer it. And we have a fun time here. I enjoy it very much, and I hope you do too. So anyway, some of my favorite projects are drawing plans, landscape plans, or doing consulting for clients that call. And even though we sold Wintergreen last year, I am still actively consulting and helping people with their yards, which I don't mind because I only get one or two calls a week, and that's nice. I had two earlier in the week, one in Glide and then one out on South Myrtle. So they were a long ways away, but I did accomplish both of them. And still going on with the radio show. And after 50 years in the nursery and landscaping world, it's tough just to quit cold turkey. And I'm still getting, like I said, phone calls for plans and consultations. And that's an easy thing, you know, because I can stay at home and do the plans because I have my office set up there. And then consultations, hey, that's great. I get to travel around from one end of the county to the other end of the county and give people instructions, and they ask questions, and we go through the whole process. And it usually takes about an hour to answer all their questions and get them started on their home landscaping. So,
and you do all of that without the internet.
I do. I got one of these things called a flip phone, and it works real well. But at home, I've got a real phone that's on the cradle there. My flip phone does not work in my canyon. We have to go out to the end of the road where the mailboxes are, and it's wide open country before the cell phones work.
So you are basically off the grid.
I would say yes.
Wow.
And my water supply is gravity flow from my springs up in the mountain that I built years and years ago. So we're set to go.
And a log cabin as well, right?
A log house.
Or a house, okay.
Yeah, it's quite large. So, I mean, it's bigger than what you'd call a cabin. So, but it's been home for, gosh, I don't know.
But you have to go how far to get your cell phone to work?
About a mile almost.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That would not work for me.
I know. You it doesn't work for a lot of people, but that's the way it is, so I don't mind. But I got a landline. You can call me on my landline anytime. It always
a what?
Rings. My landline, you know, the regular phone that you pick off the hook and say, hello, how are you?
So you could see pictures of those in history movies.
Yeah, right. Oh, geez, Louise. I don't know why I'm still doing this radio show. He comes in here and harasses me beforehand and all during the show. And
questioning the technology part here, right?
Oh.
Much of Western civilization is using cell phones and using them just fine.
Well, I use them as soon as I get out of my canyon where it's open country, where you can see the Callahans and the snow and all that, so... But anyway, I've been out. It's been tough just to quit cold turkey in this business world that you've been so wrapped up in all those years. And I'm still, like I said, getting phone calls for plans and consultations, which are easy things for me to do. And I can do them at home in my home office. So that's good. So let me explain consultations a little bit here. That's when somebody calls and... And we have a date to meet, and then I meet them at their home or business to design or fix up their landscaping, or learn how they want to do their property, how do they want to maintain their existing landscape if they have any, how do I prune this or when do I prune this? It's just a kind of an hour of verbal. Let's go back and forth, and this is how you do it. And sometimes I give them a demonstration of how to prune something and not murder the poor plant. And most people are afraid of killing their plants by pruning. Well, that's like cutting your fingernails. You don't die when you cut your fingernails or your toenails. And so that's the way I explain it, and they get it right off the bat. So, and I assure them, like I say, they won't kill their plants. And I want to demonstrate to them how you prune and why you prune and how it's good for your plant materials, whether it's with shrubs or trees or anything like that. And light pruning and shaping plants can be done year-round. You don't have to wait till the dead of winter to do it. Heavy pruning is when you do it when everything's dormant, and that way there's no real suffering for the plants, and they heal more slowly, but still they're dormant. They don't really need anything at that point. And pruning is best done when plants, like I say, are dormant in the winter. And good pruning tools are important. So if you're going to do this kind of work yourself, you want to invest in good tools and take care of them and try to visualize when you're pruning what your end product is going to be prior to beginning your cutting. You know, visualize, well, how do I want that plant to look? How short, how wide? Do I take a foot off or do I take 3 feet off? And just kind of envision what that might look like before you begin to chop on that. And you can avoid pruning, or you should avoid pruning, maybe lightly, when the weather is hot, like, you know, July, August. There's less stress to plants in the fall, in the winter, and early spring. And early spring, I'd say, is we're in early spring right now, and you probably got another half a month or so to safely prune or lightly prune. And there's some things you can prune all year long. They don't even blink. But don't hesitate to prune broken or damaged plants any time of the year. And you keep your tools sharp and clean. It's important to visualize the end product before you even start cutting. That's the thing that most people who haven't done much of it, they don't understand. They just kind of begin to cut arbitrarily, and consequently they go, oh my gosh, what did I do to that plant? It looks so bad.
And suddenly it's all it's leaning
leaning the wrong way.
one direction has got lots of
foliage on it.
Yeah, and the other doesn't. And yeah
kind of like what I did to your front yard, you know, to just mangle it and mess with it. No, I didn't, you know that. And if you've never done any pruning, ask for help. help from a professional or a master gardener, or buy a book with the before and after photos in it. This is an unpruned photinia or a rhododendron, and this is one that's been pruned properly. And once you get that visual picture, you can understand. And of course, there's explanations under those photographs of why you do it, or how much you do it, or when you do it. And so consequently, if you follow those instructions, basically, it's an easy thing to do. You just have to go slow and learn what the trees do, learn what the shrubs do. And if you have fruit trees, you need to prune any dead, diseased, or crooked limbs out of those fruit trees. And in general, just thin the good branches. I mean, the little tiny branches, well, they're not so tiny, like big around as a pencil or a little bit bigger. Those are the ones that begin to have the blossoms, if it's an apple tree. They begin to have the blossoms and things like that. And so let's say they're 2 feet long. They grew 2 feet last year. Well, you want to cut about a foot off of that, because when you cut a foot off of that, the remaining part of it is strong enough to bear the fruit. In other words, the fruit, if you get three apples on it, it's not going to break the branch. But if you leave them really long like that, and you get fruit on the end of those branches, and then it starts to, really, really sag, the weight of the fruit could just break the branch off. So you want to go like 50% on that pruning. And after you thin the branches so that the air can get in and the sunlight can get in and circulate, you want to top the limbs that are, say, out of reach and growing taller. And the fruit trees, like I say, are more productive when pruned properly. And a good example to see are the many commercial orchards in our county. You go out Garden Valley, you see commercial orchards, you go down just about any road, and you'll see grapes, you'll see apple trees, you'll see orchards, you'll see all those kinds of things. And this time of year, you'll see people out there on ladders, if they're larger trees, going after it. So, and if you see somebody, when you're driving by and you see somebody out there working in their orchard, you can stop and ask questions. Anybody that's doing that kind of work would be glad to tell you, well, this is why we do it and this is how we do it. And, once you prune a few trees and you finish it up, you'll be good to go. Just remember that prune trees are highly productive and you get more fruit. An open branch tree has better sun penetration and air circulation, so you get less mold or moss or bugs and that kind of thing. And they're easier to spray if you need to spray them as well. So you got your hand on the button.
I do, because we've got someone on the phone. What's your question for Mike Winters, the Commissioner of Dirt?
You can stop and ask questions.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I just tuned in. Maybe you covered this a little while ago, but we have carpet roses, and I've been told in the past that, we have a stand of about 12 of them in a patch, mm-hmm. and they turn out beautiful every year, but I'm wondering, I know they say that you should prune them right after the first freeze or whatever, and cut them back at least two-thirds of the... does that sound right to you, or...?
Well, I don't personally do that that way, and I've only got 50 years of experience in it, so I figure I'm doing something right. I don't usually go more than 50% on the cut.
50%?
Yeah. Leave some foliage and some branching so that they can bloom, and you'll be surprised at how quickly they recuperate and start blooming again.
Oh, I know they do.
Yeah. they're a great little plant, I'll tell you.
Yeah, last year we let them get a little too big before we did the first pruning, and but I'm thinking right now, with all the freezes that we've been having, that maybe right after it quits freezing now would be a good time to do that.
Well, you don't have to wait till it quits freezing. You can do it tomorrow morning if you want, or this afternoon if you got the daylight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it won't hurt them a bit. They're dormant.
Won't hurt them.
Nope.
Okay. Well, that's what I needed to... And you think just cutting them back about halfway would...
No more than half. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, doke. Well, that sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
All right, back with more in a moment. 4:20. It is the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, it is 4:23 at 55 degrees, which might actually be the warmest temperature of the year so far.
I believe that it would be, yes. Anyway, I just got off a call, and so if you want to call 673-4464 with any of your lawn or tree or garden questions, I'll be glad to give you a solution and point you in the right direction.
So, and make sure if you call in, you turn your radio down, though, while you're on, so we don't hear two of you.
Yeah, yeah, echoes in the background kind of deal. Anyway, I've been talking about pruning and, you know, fruit trees and shrubs and things like that. And, I've gone by some larger orchards years and years ago, and I watched how the orchard people were actually pruning large trees and got the idea right away. Don't be afraid to cut. They grow back. And I've done some very drastic pruning on fruit trees and other kinds of trees as experiments just to see if they would come back and how would they be. Well, they not only came back, but they were so robust and full of leaves and fruit that I thought, that's the secret. You're not messing with the roots. The roots are tuned into a larger tree, and all of a sudden that larger tree is only 50%. So consequently, the energy of the root system still goes up, and you get a lot of branches, a lot of fruit, a lot of flowers, and not only just on fruit trees, but you can do that way with just about any tree. So, you know, once you prune a few trees and finish them up, you're going to be good to go. Just remember that pruned trees are highly productive, and you get more fruit. And an open branch tree, if you clear some of the skinny, non-bearing branches out of the middle of the tree, it has better sun penetration and air circulation, so there's less mold, less moss, bugs, that kind of thing, and they're easier to spray if you need to spray, because you can actually hit all the branches, and that's okay. And then when they're young, you can expand the shade from that tree. There are some principles that work on shrubs. The same principles that work on shrubs. And for instance, you want to say a privacy screen from a neighbor or a street or a large building or something like that. Any shrubs you plant will grow wider and taller. And so you want to make sure that you want to space them out so that they actually do the job for you. And you want to top them out, say, on a regular basis, once a year or so. And that's what gets them thicker and fuller, and they increase in branch diameter and overall strength. Like I say, topping the shrub, the side growth fills in more quickly and gives you a screen from a road or a neighbor. And, you know, they're cheaper and prettier than a wood fence. But a wood fence is not bad. Just plant the shrubs on the inside of the wood fence and give them plenty of room. So shrubs planted along your home, you know, foundation planting, they need pruning from growing into the siding, and they also need pruning for air circulation. If you plant them too close to the side of the house or the side of the garage or a shop or something like that, they don't do as well. They'll grow and they'll live, but they're not going to be at their optimum if they're too close to a structure or too close to one another. And you know, just don't crowd them when you plant them. Give them plenty of space to grow. And I know, well, these are just small plants. I better put them 3 feet apart. Well, those small plants might be the type that grows 4.5 to 5 feet tall and wide. So if you plant them 2 or 3 feet apart, you're overdoing it by about 70%. You want them to be nice. You want them to be full. And they will be. It'll just take an extra year or two for them to get to their optimum size. You're looking at me like you...
No, I'm just contemplating.
You're contemplating. You know, I get afraid when he contemplates. But always allow like about 2 feet of space from a house, or minimum 2 feet of space from a house, maybe 3 feet, depending on the type of shrub it is, or, you know, or a fence or any kind of structure. Then as the shrub grows, prune it away from the fence or the house, and the same type of spacing is needed along sidewalks or driveways as well. You know, you don't want to plant them right up next to a sidewalk, and then 2 years later or 3 years later, your kids can't get by because the shrubs are halfway through the sidewalk, and, you know, that's not cool at all. So when shopping for these plants, you know, keep size in mind. It's much easier to select smaller growing plants in these areas, smaller overall growth. And so do your homework when shopping for these plants, for like borders or along walkways or along fences. And in my career, I have seen thousands of plants too large for the area that they were planted in. And this was because the homeowner didn't do any prior research as to size and how they'll grow. And then they call me to fix it. It's okay, I'll be there. I'll be there on Tuesday at 3 o'clock. But there are two ways to fix it. One is to prune it severely, or to remove the large plants and plant smaller and slower growing ones in the same areas. And always do your homework, you know, prior to plant shopping. It will save you money and time in the long run. And like I say, I speak from like 50 years of experience with all this stuff. And over the years, I've talked clients out of certain plants because I know where they want to do with them, and I know how large they're going to grow. And even if they were pruned frequently with good planning, you know, your yard can be beautiful and easy maintenance. So that's the kind of things, the thought processes you need. And like I say, there are books on the market. You know, you go to one of the box stores and they've got all these gardening books and things like that, and they'll have a small booklet there that says how to prune or how to garden or how to water your lawn. But you don't have to buy some encyclopedia type thing to get this information. And they're, you know, like $3.95 or $4.95. And they usually have pictures of before and after, and you can get an idea from that. And that way you don't blow it and you don't make any mistakes. But if you want a very full landscape, there are smaller varieties of shrubs that they can use to fill the space. You know, also placing boulders in key locations can give your yard that full look, and no maintenance required on the boulders, and they don't get any larger than what they were when you put them in. And you can plant smaller plants around the boulders, and you've got a total complete landscape right off the bat. On Monday and Tuesday this week, I got calls for consultations. I love consultations. One was, like I say, up to North Umpqua on Monday. And the first on Monday was a nice elderly lady that I had met before, whose yard was on a slope overlooking the North Umpqua River. A nice natural setting amongst old growth Doug fir. I mean, this is like a picture book place. And a real low maintenance yard with hardy plants that needed a little care. A few large natural boulders with small shrubs were growing throughout, and a small trail winding through the landscape. It was very natural landscaping, and it looked great. And it wasn't that large, maybe 40 feet long and 25, maybe 30 feet wide, and it was on an easy slope that you can actually walk on. And she's probably late 70s, early 80s, and she walked up there like a Girl Scout, for crying out loud, telling me, watch my step. I go, yes, ma'am, I will. And my only suggestions to her were to fertilize you know, regularly. Some of them, some of the plants, they looked okay, but they could have looked a lot better with a little bit more food, because she admitted that, well, I don't fertilize them much at all. And I told her, you know, what type to get. And, you know, this worked all out, and she understood that. And my only, like I said, that was my real only suggestion, fertilize regularly. That means like at least twice a year, twice in the spring, a month or so apart, and maybe once in the fall as before it gets really cold. And the fertilizer will eventually get down into the root systems, and when it's time to grow, the root systems are fully charged and ready to burst out of the ground as soon as the temperatures and the daylight are on schedule. So, and I suggested a few things she could do to give a little more color. And there, you know, like I said, there was a nice trail and a big deer fence, because there I almost ran over a deer going up her driveway, but there was no deer in her yard. I mean, her fence did the number. And there wasn't much I could say to improve her landscape. It was really an easy consultation, and it, like I say, it took me longer to drive there than to actually consult. But that's okay. I enjoyed it. I didn't have a problem with it. It was good. And but when you're doing your own home landscaping, for instance, always go look at plants that are available in different nurseries or the box stores, and read the labels on the plant container, and they'll give you it'll grow 4 to 6 feet tall and 4 to 6 feet wide, or they'll be 2 to 3 feet tall, et cetera. So you can get an idea of, you know where you want to plant them, whether it's along a fence or along a sidewalk or you know, at your front entry, and you'll know the size, the ultimate size of that plant, and therefore you don't spend as much money buying plants that you really don't need. But once you do purchase your plants and you get them in the ground and you get used to them and you watch how they grow for a year or so, and you think, well, you know, I could use a few more things. At that point in time, you can go down and get a few more, maybe ground covers or something that's small and flowering, and kind of fill those empty spaces really well. And you just don't want to overcrowd it, and you don't want to dump everything in there all at one time. We'll be back in a little bit.
All right. It is 4:35, Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 93.9 FM 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, 4:38, 21 minutes away from the afternoon report at 5 o'clock, 55 degrees. And he is Douglas County's Commissioner of Dirt.
And I didn't make that name up. Kyle did a long time ago. He thought he was going to hurt my feelings, but it doesn't. Anyway, I'm talking about planting and not overplanting and pruning. This is time of the year that you want to start getting wound up to do that kind of thing. And it's a good time of year because a lot of the box stores and nurseries are getting new material all the time. And they are putting out their bare root trees, or some of them should already be put out, and new shrubs for the year. And it's a good time to shop, and sometimes you can get some really good deals this early in a year, because it's not business is not exactly booming. It's, you know, it's pretty good, but it's not booming like in March, April, May, especially like in May, even into June. Nurseries do a good amount of sales in their things, because a lot of folks don't even think about getting out in the yard and doing anything until the weather actually warms up to, say, 60 degrees at least, and there's no rain coming down and no snow falling and that kind of thing. And I don't blame them one bit, even though I have pruned and worked in the snow and the rain. and so, I know how it goes. But spacing, again, I'm going to hammer this for a while. Spacing on plants, number one, if you really look at your space adequately and say, well, I've got 40 feet of fence that I want to decorate, or I want to put some shrubs, you know, near it, not right up against it, but, you know, within four feet of the fence, so they have room to grow. And, I want to make sure that the shrub is not something wild that's going to get to 20 feet in 3 years, but I want it to get to be, 5-6 feet, just to kind of decorate the fence area, decorate the backyard area, just kind of soften that fence look. Not that fences are, some fences are very, very nice, the way people build them. And then there are some that, I wonder, why in the heck did they spend all that time building that ugly thing? But that's a matter of opinion. But at any rate, when you are looking for those shrubs, and the same theory goes for foundation planting. Let's say here's the side of your house, and then you've got a sidewalk that goes around to the garage or something like that. And there's a planting bed, and the planting bed hopefully is at least 3 feet wide so that you could actually plant something in there. If it's smaller, if it's like only 2 feet wide, your selection of plant materials is going to be somewhat diminished, simply because there's a lot of plants that will grow in there, but they'll not get to much size. And if you were looking for something that would grow 2 or 3 feet tall, that's not a lot of room for them to grow, unless you prune and keep them. You're a yard person, and you go out there and you want to make sure that they're doing well, and they're getting all the nutrition they need, they're getting the water they need, blah 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 blah, and you can fit them in. But you don't want to crowd plants. It looks good initially, like I say, for maybe 3 years. But around the fourth year, fifth year, you're going, wow, they sure, what a mess. I know, I bought my first house way back in, 1969. And it was a gardener's nightmare. The folks that owned it prior to us lived there for 40 years. And I think they planted one of everything. And it took me, I think, about 2 years just to clean it up and prune it down and remove some of the things, simply because it was way too much. And you couldn't even see the house, for crying out loud, because from the street, because of so much trees and shrubbery that they had planted too close, that got, they grew 7 and 8 feet tall, and they blocked the windows and things like that. So I had to do a massive cleanup, but it took me quite some time, because I was going to college out there at Umpqua and working in the summers, and I just didn't have a lot of time that I could just spend at home. I tried to, but it didn't work out real well. Just be thoughtful, and when you're visiting these nurseries, ask questions. One of the best books out there on the market, and it's a little spendy, but it's called The Western Garden Book. It's like the major encyclopedia of plant materials. It has color photos of gardens, of plants, and then it goes from A to Z in the types of plants that are available. It gives descriptions and sizes of what the plants will get to in the long run. So you've got some idea of what you're looking for. You've got some idea of what's going to fit. If you have a big yard, well, you can get a little more extravagant. But if you have a small yard, and newer homes nowadays seem to have a little bit smaller yard than they did 20 years ago. So consequently, you want to make sure that whatever plant materials you do buy are going to actually fit and not overgrow your place in 3 years and turn into a super, super pruning job and hauling job because they grew too fast, too nice, and you were afraid to prune. But it's something that everybody learns after a while. They try this and they try that. And I've made that same mistake way back when. I told the story about the little junipers I bought at Payless one time, and I planted them along my driveway in about a 4-foot bed that I had created. And they were Gold Coast junipers, bright yellow, golden green, really pretty little junipers. And gosh, they had them on sale for 98 cents or 99 cents or something. So I bought 8 of them. and thought, well, that ought to fill that area. Well, it filled the area, and about 3 years later, I had to take them all out because they were halfway into the driveway, for crying out loud, and they were torturing one another by growing into each other, and they were really too big for me to transplant at that time. And I think I was working for BLM or something like that. I wasn't doing my landscaping work yet and hadn't started my business yet. But had I been licensed and bonded and passed all the tests and spent more time in college and learned more, I wouldn't have gotten 8 of those things. I might have gotten 3 and kept them widely spaced apart so that they could stay there for more than 3 or 4 years. They could have stayed there for maybe 10 years without being a nuisance to whoever pulled in the driveway. So those are things that you have to think about, and think about them long term. What's that going to look like 10 years down the road? Am I going to be pleased with it? Is it going to work? And of course, if you're fertilizing properly a couple of times a year, if you're watering properly, and once a month in the summer or twice a month in the summer, depends on how you water, with a hose or sprinkler system, they will do good, and they'll respond to that water, and they'll respond to that fertilizer and be really, really pretty for you. But the really, really pretty ones also grow very quickly. So you can start your pruning, let's say your fence is 6 feet tall and your shrubs, when you put them in, are 2 feet tall. And then 3 years later, they're 4 feet tall, and then they're over the fence the next couple of years. You want to make sure that you got this pruning thing down pat, and you didn't put them too close to the fence, and they're not going to, push the fence over, and that's very, very important. But it comes with experience. You just don't pop out of the box and say, yeah, I know this and I can do that. And although, geez Louise, I'll tell you what. But I started out the show on consultations, and I like consultations simply because you go and you ask the folks, what are you looking for? And they begin to tell you what they like, and you can say, well, that'll work, or that won't work, or if we do this, you can do that. But on Tuesday, I had another consultation, but this one was on the South Umpqua River, and it was not far from Tiller, I thought. And the couple, very nice couple, and they wanted a vineyard on about 3 acres of their side hill, and it wasn't real steep or anything, but it was a slope to it, and they wanted to start growing wine grapes. And the site, in my estimation, was perfect for grapes. It was about, like I say, a 3-acre space, and it was fenced and slightly sloping in a southerly direction, and they had their work cut out for them. And it was an old pasture with heavy grass, real heavy grass. It was beautiful view of the valley, and the South Umpqua River was probably a half a mile down the slope. And I talked about removing the grass. That was the biggest thing. If you're going to grow anything, in that kind, you got to get all that grass out of there. And the equipment needed to do the job, you first have to blade off the grass and the brush, and then get down to bare dirt. And second was to get a large tractor or even a cat with a deep disc and ripper teeth, and turn the ground over. If you can turn it down, 2 feet deep, that's good. And then you let it set to dry out, and then you till it as deep as possible, and then drag it smooth. And I thought it was a great spot for a vineyard. The only part I couldn't tell them was what type of grapes to plant, because I'm not a wine grape grower. But they have the ingredients for success with that slope, with the soil. The soil was great. It's, some clay content, but not like the valley floor, because like I said, it was on a slope. And it was a very nice slope, actually, facing south, good air circulation, and not much fog, because they were, a couple hundred feet above the road and the river. And I counted 38 grape varieties in the Western Garden Book but there's many more. And I recommended that they visit some other grape growers and ask, hey, lots of questions. What kind of grapes are they, and what does it take, and how long do they grow, and when do you get your grapes? And, you know, because most ag people, most farmers are happy to ask questions, answer questions. They're happy to share what they do with whoever seems to be really interested. So, you know, I meet some very interesting people in consulting, and I really enjoy the consulting part. And I'll make a few notes for them so they don't forget. And like I said, but they're eager to improve their property. They're eager to make their property look nicer or turn it into something agricultural in the long run to where they can, you know, reap some benefit from it. And No hard labor in consulting. All I have to do just call it quits after 50 years of doing doing hand labor and those kinds of things. So we'll be back in a minute.
All right, final segment when we come back. 451 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
It is 4:53, a few more minutes with the Commissioner of Dirt. I just went and talked to one of the meteorologists at the National Weather Service. So our 55 right now is the second warmest. It got up to 56 at one point on the 6th of the month. But otherwise, one of the warmest days of the month so far. And indeed, they're going to be monitoring very closely Sunday through next Wednesday just how low the snow level comes for the Umpqua Valley. Still mainly around 1,000 feet. But, of course, that can shift one direction or the other and make a big difference in what we're experiencing around here, coupled with how much moisture happens to be in the system, which, again, we're really too far out to do more than guess at this point.
Oh, yeah, it's tricky business. Back when I was working for Oregon State University doing snow surveys and watershed management research, we were always going to places on the Andrews Experimental Forest and doing our snow depth and making our charts, and most of that work was done via snowmobile or snowshoes in some instances where the snow was too deep. And I've got a lot of experience in snow work. It was cold work, but this down here is like the Bahamas in comparison. So that's east of Eugene, about 60 miles up, headed toward Bend. And it's you go to Blue River, a little tiny town, and you go past Blue River about another 2 miles, and then there's a road that goes to the reservoir, and the Andrews Experimental Forest is behind the reservoir, and like I say, 17,000 acres.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's where I worked. That was my office. Me and a couple other guys. That was all. And then a lot of students from OSU would come up and spend the summer up there and camp and do their research projects. And there might be, oh gosh, two or three campfuls of them, you know, with five or six people in each camp. And so you got to know a lot of folks and what they were doing and why they were doing it. So
did you have to live up there too?
Oh yeah, I lived in Blue River. We had a beautiful house right on Blue River. Blue River, from my living room window to Blue River was about 35 feet.
Wow, that's a little close.
Yeah, but it's a controlled dam. It's they don't have floods up there. They actually let out so much, and then they close it up about May and fill that puppy up, and then there's people out there fishing and water skiing and swimming and doing everything. It's a beautiful reservoir.
I don't think I've ever been there.
You ought to go on a trip one of these days and check it out. You'd like it.
I don't seem to be able to get beyond Interstate 5 between Roseburg and Eugene. I haven't been at the coast since 2020.
I think you're due for a trip then, buddy.
So apparently it's still there.
It is. But anyway, we're having a great spring so far.
It's not spring yet. It's winter.
To me, it's been spring.
Oh, boy.
And we've gotten a great amount of rain, and the ground is soaked with snow in the mountains. And it's a little early for home gardens unless you have raised beds. And it's a good time for, like I said, shopping for seeds because April and May are coming quick, and then the stores are hammered, the nurseries are hammered, and if your ground isn't too wet, you can get a start on your ground prep, at least. Maybe you just, if there's full of weeds, you can spray it with Roundup, for crying out loud. You're not going to be planting for another month or so, but you can kill all the weeds and really reduce your workload throughout the spring and summer. My raised beds are perfect right now. There's no weeds in them, and the soil, you can put your hand in the soil. I put my super mix in there with lots of good mulch and topsoil and some sand. I have great drainage, and my beds are 2.5 feet deep, and our garden was spectacular last year. We were still, my wife planted way too many tomatoes. Gosh, I ate tomatoes until my eyeballs turned into tomatoes. I mean, it was, but anyway, start on that ground prep, and start looking at the vegetables and see what's available out there. And, probably not very much at this point, but they're going to be out there. So you want to make sure things are prepped and you don't have mud and you have good drainage. And even when it warms up, we're ready to plant and ready to go. You're not going to have a delay there. And last year was our first year for our raised beds, and what a great garden with good soil, and the whole thing was a real success. In the past, I always took the backyard or part of the yard, got my tiller out or my tractor out, and tilled up the ground, and consequently, I would plant too much. Mm. And so when harvest time rolled around, we were giving shopping bags full of vegetables away to our clients that came into the nursery. And I'd say, would you like some tomatoes? Oh, yeah, I'd like some tomatoes. Here, ma'am, and have a plastic bag with about 15 tomatoes in there. Whoa, I can't eat all them. I said, well, give some away if you don't want them. Same way with the potatoes. Gosh, I grew potatoes. We had enough potatoes for 2 years, it seemed like. But that's the way to garden. Grow enough to eat and give away at the same time. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week. Have more some stuff.
All right. And the podcast up soon at 541radio.com. Back next week with the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.